Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, we are joined by Deanna Lorison and Scott Barber. Deanna is the development director of the City of Riverside, which includes redevelopment, economic development and marketing, housing and neighborhoods, arts and culture, real property services, and capital projects. Prior to joining Riverside City in April 2009, Deanna worked for the Riverside County Economic Development Agency, EDA, for 15 years and was their managing director from 07 to 09. And Scott Barber is the community development director for the City of Riverside, which includes building and safety and code enforcement. Scott's been involved in the creation of new and innovative programs for code enforcement and implementation of new permitting and financial systems. In the past, Scott's been the administrator of the Transportation and Land Management Agency with staff of about 900. Welcome back, both of you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thanks, Bruce.
Does the fact that California has a budget problem enter into what cities have to be cautious of and what they get to do?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And in what way does that – because you're dealing with a redevelopment fund.
Right. For redevelopment in particular, those are local funds generated from local property taxes.
Okay.
However, the state has decided that they need some of those funds to help close their budget gap. And right now – current budget, and Sacramento requires us to pay $17 million by May 10th of this year. So that's a big chunk of money coming out of what I would otherwise have available for both affordable housing and for just general redevelopment projects.
And what percentage is that? Just curious.
Our total redevelopment budget's about $50 million. So
oh, my goodness. A third of it.
Yes.
And they can just sort of help themselves to that?
They're
trying. At least they're trying to do that. Wow. And it was that, and I know that was something that was attempted last year, but somehow that was stopped. And now maybe the attorneys on that side have figured out a new way to put it in a sentence that it makes it look different.
They tried it a year ago, and there was a court case that found that because of the state constitution, they couldn't use redevelopment funds to fix the state budget. So their attorneys carefully looked at that and tried to craft it in a way that they hope that they're going to be successful this time. It is being challenged by local jurisdictions, League of California Cities, and we'll see what the outcome of the current court case is.
Now, you mentioned that some of the budget for the redevelopment comes, or maybe all of it comes from the tax collection?
Correct.
Okay. Now, has that been affected by the last few years as far as the downturn?
Property taxes have declined. For our redevelopment areas, because Riverside's an older city and our redevelopment areas are in older areas, we didn't see a big upswing because there wasn't a lot of property improvements and turnover happening as if we were in a brand new area. So the redevelopment has seen a slight decline in our revenues, but we've not seen any dramatic decreases. The city overall has seen about a 10% decline in property tax revenue alone.
That's really pretty reasonable. I would have thought it would have been much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, we were talking the last segment about the banks having to step up to the plate and start fixing something. As an investor, I buy property occasionally at a trustee sale. And let's say that the electric meter's gone. I buy it and the electric meter's gone. What would be the process typically that I'm – and is code enforcement involved in me ending up being able to get power again?
Well, for an abandoned property, a vacant property, it'd be very typical for the meter to be gone. Either we perhaps might have had it removed if it presented a safety hazard, or those things just get stolen. There are folks who regularly look for abandoned properties and everything that they can put their hands on. I mean, we've plenty of properties we found where the panel's gone.
Yeah. The panel, but they, well.
So you definitely won't have a meter then.
No.
So what we do is pretty early on in the code enforcement process, we'll record a notice of pendency. Okay. So there's record there for you.
Okay. So if I check title, I'm going to know, okay, something's up.
Right.
Okay.
And there's contact information, case information, and we'll work with you. Our goal is to obviously get the house rehabilitated and reoccupied.
Okay.
Because that's what's best for our city, for our neighborhoods. Get that house to where, property taxes are getting paid and people are using electricity and all those things. Good things are happening. So and if there's rehabilitation that needs to happen and it requires a permit, then that's our building and safety department. Again, very proactive group of people, really good to work with. We'll go all the way up to actually doing some on-site inspections with you if you really need it, but in anticipation of a permit so that we can talk to you about the kinds of things that might be a concern.
How easy is it to figure out what the fine is? Because there'll be two different instances an investor might deal with. We might go into an escrow with a lender-owned property, an REO, and we'll have a 30-day escrow, and we will get title insurance, and then we'll find out that there's a pendency on it, and then we can call up at our leisure and find out what that is. At a trustee sale, I might not know until 10 o'clock that this is going to, in fact, be a deal. I will pull up title, but I'll have a pendency, and I literally will have to pick up the phone and go, how much is that? Because, unfortunately, that's sort of like a tax bill. That's not going to get paid by any of the proceeds I buy the house for. So I'm just curious, what is the time frame typically of being able to really know, and does that accumulate if the work isn't done?
Well, if there's just been, two or three citations issued, administrative citations, that's pretty simple. I mean, I can tell you that information probably over the phone.
Okay.
As long as I can, pull the case file and get a look at it, you can find that out pretty easily. If there have been abatement costs, we've had contractors out boarding it up more than once because boards disappear as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to pump your pool, those kinds of things. We've done an administrative hearing. We've got an admin order. You've got daily fines accumulating. That takes longer.
Okay.
And so what we try to do on those, in your illustration of the trustee sale, you're not going to know over the phone on that one, Bruce.
Okay.
You're just not. But
that's fair. I mean, it's a lot to ask because you're talking about probably stopping everything you do just to concentrate on this address, which is
exactly.
Probably not likely.
Exactly. And with 1,000 open cases, the other thing that you just don't ever know is you may be calling on the case file that's out in the field with the officer right now. I'm pretty much blind at that point. I can tell you I have a case, but
right.
they've got all the documentation with them. So what we do a lot of times with lenders is we'll issue a 10-day letter, though. So you call us up and say, what's my bill? And we'll give you the bill, and we'll suspend daily admin, civil penalties, and all that for 10 days.
Okay.
So you're good. If you're – it's sort of like dating down on tax and title if you get to where you're
right.
trying to figure out what your final bond proceeds are or whatever. Same thing. We'll give you 10 days, and – will freeze the account.
Okay.
So, and I think that's pretty fair.
And that's basically, you're not going to see from our side if we're making progress and headed in the right direction, not necessarily completing the work.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
What that does is you're going to pay off the fines that are there, and then we're going to work with you on getting the house rehabilitated. And during that time period, you're not going to have new fines accumulating. As long as you're acting expeditiously, what we don't want you to do is just do what the bank did in the past, which is pick up this property and then do nothing with it. But that really is not, as I understand your business, that's probably not in your interest anyway.
No.
I mean, you don't want to hold a piece of property for another year that's not producing any income or being sold.
No.
So.
And in a way, you just brought up an interesting subject, is the synergy that really should exist between investor and city, is that our goal is to get something fixed as well and as fast as possible so we can, in fact, turn it and make a profit and have somebody occupy the property, either as a renter or as a new occupant owner. So it seems like we both have the same interest in mind. The problem probably comes in maybe in perception, because code enforcement is looked at as something very threatening sometimes by the investors. Just go, oh, my God.
Well, that's our goal. So
okay. Okay. And there, I suppose that's necessary. In other words, but you want us to do stuff right, and you want to know there's probably repercussions if we don't.
Well, and I'm joking, but
yeah.
we want you to know that we're serious about what we do. And we've had some folks in the financial industry who just – didn't believe that we could do what we've done. We actually had them challenge the constitutionality of our ordinance and just recently whipped them on that. So I think it's pretty clear. I mean, we're serious about maintaining our neighborhoods. I mean, I live in the city of Riverside. I care about my city, and I'm not going to let it deteriorate. And, if you want to ignore your investment somewhere else, that's between you and that city. But in my city, you're not going to.
Okay. Well, we might have a few more properties to deal with. So I guess there, but it's a learning curve always.
Sure.
The lender now has figured out that when I have one in Riverside, somebody's going to have to deal with it pretty quickly. Let's talk about redevelopment. That's just a very interesting topic sometimes, especially when you have a gigantic project that just emerged. The new theater, or not the theater, the new theater, but the new old theater.
That's, yes.
I mean, that was a huge project, a lot of money, and really a very, you know, like the Mission Inn project, a big media event. And now Riverside has this amazing theater. So now where does that money come from? And that's got to be a lot more than just an annual collection.
Yes. Actually, the Riverside Renaissance is a huge capital improvement program that the city has come up with, and the Fox Performing Arts Center was one of those projects. The city used a bunch of different funding sources to pay for all these little projects, redevelopment being one little piece.
Okay.
The Fox Performing Arts Center itself was not paid for with redevelopment funds. It was paid for through a bond issuance that the city did to provide capital funds to do part of the over $100 million worth of projects under the Riverside Renaissance. Our redevelopment funds have to be used in our redevelopment project areas for specific reasons outlined in state law to basically improve the area so that they are revitalized and an asset to the community rather than something that's not. And the Fox Performing Arts Center is one of our signature locations in downtown Riverside, and then we're doing some redevelopment projects in the vicinity to complement it and to help improve downtown and make it a destination.
When you say the bond issuance, how long ago was that? And is that a good thing that it happened then?
Well, I'm not in charge of doing the bond issuances. That's our county financial officer, city financial officer. And that was done before I came on board with the city. I'm not sure if 607-ish.
Okay.
But yes, it's a good thing. It's a long-term fixed interest rate for the city to invest in capital improvements, just like a homeowner takes a long-term mortgage to buy the property.
Okay.
And that's a fixed component of their budget. That's what a bond issuance is a long-term debt issuance with a small fixed payment every year to fund things that you couldn't fund as you go.
Okay. So it's sort of like having a first trust deed or a trust deed against the future progress of a city.
Right. With a fixed interest rate.
Okay. And that's probably very good to have tied up about
yes.
now too.
Yes.
Okay. Now, is that something that's voted on? Or is that something, how does that get approved?
It's approved by the city council.
Okay.
Under the city council's financing authority set forth by the charter.
Okay. Now, when you have a downturn like this, and then you've got people that have income damaged, there's programs for down payment assistance, and even is there rental assistance as well? And under what hat does that come under?
Okay. Yes. Down payment assistance program is something that the city's done for a number of years. 5 years ago, there was very little activity because of how high housing prices were.
Right. No one.
The gap was too big. We
right.
couldn't meet that gap. But with the decline in housing prices and thus the increase in affordability, this has become another big component of trying to encourage long-term homeownership in the city of Riverside. And we fund that with both redevelopment funds and some federal funds that we receive. In terms of rental assistance, that's primarily done at the county level, although we did receive one federal grant aimed at preventing homelessness and providing some interim rental assistance to help people be stabilized and move into stronger positions. And that's something that we were able to pick up a staff person that Scott would have had to lay off to manage that program because of federal funds.
The Home Investment Partnership,
that's the federal program that helps fund down payment assistance programs.
Okay. Now, is that down payment assistance, does that come in the form of what they call like a silent second?
That's correct. It's basically a little bit of gap financing. So the homeowner gets the maximum fixed rate first mortgage that they can afford, and then we come up with a little bit of gap to make the difference between that mortgage amount that they can afford and the price of the home.
Okay. Scott, you mentioned something at lunch that kind of caught my attention, and there are projects that come across your desk that get your attention and might actually get moved along at a brisker pace because they might solve either an employment issue or maybe to provide the kind of housing that the city really favors at this point. So what kind of project would that be at this point?
Well, we have part of our economic development program which is a collaboration of Deanna's department and my department and our public utilities and public works. We have a program in place where if you're investing a certain amount of money, if you're bringing, I believe it's 100 jobs, do you recall the exact investment amount on the capital?
Unfortunately, I don't. However, you have to be bringing good quality jobs right. to the city or be at risk of losing a number of good quality jobs to the city. And right. then there's a discount provided in your utility rates for a limited period of time.
And what we'll do if you're a new development is we give you fast track authorization. Mm-hmm. And so basically, Deanna and I communicate on that. We sign the fast track document, and then you get priority treatment through planning, through building and safety. You get priority inspections. You also get bumped up for plan review for your public utilities. We do everything we can to get your project on the ground and people employed.
There's the city of Riverside is one of the leaders in the green movement, the energy conservation, that type of thing, which has been pretty terrific. Now you are starting to create a program where investors can get rebates if they do a certain range of things, and that's pretty neat. I think you'll see investors respond to that.
Well, we're the first Emerald City in the state of California, and we're proud of our green programs, and our public utilities department is really taking the lead on that, and we'll be renewable. What is it, 50% renewable by 2013? I don't think there's another utility around that can make that claim, and so we're very responsible, and we also really want to provide a good service to our community and also good rates to our shareholders.
It seems that the fact that Riverside has its own resources is a very significant cost savings going forward. And how many other cities enjoy that benefit?
I think everyone would like to.
That's true.
I think if you look around, at least in the Inland Empire, there are many, many jurisdictions that are served by Edison for electricity and are served by a variety of providers, usually MWD or affiliates of it, for water. You know, Riverside has a fantastic history, and the forefathers in Riverside really were brilliant the way they put it together. I mean, they secured water rights for the city of Riverside that are unmatched. And we put together our own public utility, and really the dividend to the citizens is lower cost electricity and also assistance with city programs like our rebates and so on. I mean, it's huge. And I was mentioning to, I guess it wasn't Deanna, but tomorrow we have our 2000th Planning Commission meeting. And so in 1915, planning commissions were authorized by the state of California. We had a planning commission in 1915. That's the kind of city heritage that we have in our city. I mean, it's been a place of people who were thoughtful and long range looking. And, you know, Deanna and I are the benefits of that in our programs. I mean, it's still that kind of place where we look forward with our public utilities and our programs. We really want to be out there on the cutting edge doing innovative things.
You know, what's interesting is that the short run situation that we have is really probably very different than a 20-year projection of where Riverside will ultimately get. So a lot of the decisions that have to be made the next 24 months might really not have ever been thought that would be necessary for a growing city, but we're taking this dip. I'm just curious, are we losing migration out of Riverside? Are we still positive there? I just wondered if you knew.
Well, we'll know. You know, the census is about to take
That's
place,
true.
And we'll have a better idea. You know, the community surveys that that they do each year. I think we still had some growth. I'd be really interested to see how our census data comes back. I mean, it's really an important tool that we use.
How far out does the Planning Commission say look out and say this is where we need to be, way out there? And how do you figure that out?
Well, in 2007, we adopted a 20-year general plan. And so it looks at growth for the next 20 years, certainly based on SCAG data for growth in the area. Some of that may change some with the upcoming census, but that's sort of our window that we're looking at. We want to make sure that we've poised ourselves for the kind of growth that could happen here in the next 20 years.
The city, I never, since I haven't been involved in the city, I read the word wards. So the city's divided into wards. And if you can explain, first of all, what is a ward? How is it determined? And if you're in the one ward or another, are you somehow eligible for some funds that you might not be if you're in a different ward?
Well, wards are basically districts. The city's divided up into seven wards based on population. A census will be used in redistricting the wards.
Okay.
And they're all supposed to be approximately equal in population. And each ward then elects a member of the city council.
Okay.
And that's the governing body for the city. In terms of funding, it's not so much ward-based as based on where we have redevelopment project areas, where we have community development block grant target areas, and other kinds of demographic and property information that comes to form what those target areas are.
And how are those redevelopment areas selected? Is it income, or is it number of foreclosures, and does it change?
Well, under state law, there's a very defined process for redevelopment and what qualifies. And a redevelopment project area is a specific boundary. It takes about a year to go through the process to get that in place. And from that point forward, then the property tax, the new property tax generated in that area is what is redevelopment funds that then comes to the agency. It's called tax increment to fund ongoing programs. The idea being that you take an area that has various economic blighting factors and physical blighting factors that is a drag on the community. And you take any growth in property taxes from that to put back into that area to improve it and make it better so that it's no longer a drag on the community.
Okay. Do you ever, I just thought of this question, do you ever partner with somebody? Let's say they have a parcel of land or an apartment unit. Now, as a matter of fact, there was an apartment, a set of apartment units in Riverside that apparently was pretty messed up, and it got improved and won an award. Now, was that still privately owned at that time? Do you remember the project? And anyway, there was a, so just in general, if somebody has a project that's kind of overwhelming to them, Is there a way they can come to the city and say, perhaps you can provide funds and maybe we can work out a long-term deal where we provide affordable housing or something?
Yes. We are required to spend 20% of the redevelopment funds that I spoke about on affordable housing. And that's increasing and preserving the community's supply of affordable housing. Part of that is new construction. We will work with nonprofits or some for-profits to help finance that. But it has to be long-term affordable housing. There's very strict rules put in place by both state law and then federal law as well for what's eligible and what the rents can be and that sort of thing.
And for a length of time, too.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of noticed that. Just with a couple minutes left, there's been a lot of developments probably that got started, and maybe not so much in Riverside City, so correct me if I'm wrong. Riverside City, does it have a lot of land projects that probably were, they thought they would be building on by now, and now they can't?
We had, I could think of three that in the city where there was significant progress. I mean, they were out of the ground, and they stopped. And so one of them was over by Lowe's out on Magnolia, was a condominium project that ultimately the FDIC took it down.
Okay.
They basically disassembled the wood, took out the foundations, and called it a day.
Wow.
So
okay.
That was a new one on us. I mean, that's, you don't really see that very often.
No.
And they're actually currently marketing that property for development.
Are they? Yeah.
They were just, I think bids were due March 1st.
Well, and the problem was it sat as the, in sort of that raw lumber state for so long that they couldn't, then the wood no longer had the values it should have had. And so you just couldn't finish the project. And a lot of people looked at it. I mean, we had several different people come in and say, you know, we think we can make this go. And once they really did their evaluation, they couldn't make it go. So there's another one out. No, it's actually two sort of out in the western end of the city. One of them's a large home development, and that one's going to be a ways away because there's four different banks involved in it. It was broken up, and it's a mess. And we have a housing development that stopped. It's restarted.
So. Okay. Well, that's pretty contained damage. I'm sure the county of Riverside might have a few more because we do see land going back a lot into foreclosure, but most of it's probably in county just because that's where a lot of the spec would have been. Well, I've really enjoyed our meeting, Deanna Lorson and Scott Barber. Thanks so much for spending time. I know you've got a very busy schedule, and you haven't even been able to answer any emails or anything.
Thanks again.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.